Wartime for the Chocolate Girls by Annie Murray. Read by Annie Aldington. They are wrapped first in metal foil, then in an airtight wrapping gummed at the edge, then in a purple and gold wrapper. The machine on which I work wraps 80 of these blocks every minute. People often ask me, "Do you find it monotonous doing the same job all the time?" Well, no. Because although you might think that every day appears to be the same noise of the machines, the same miles and miles of chocolate bars and blocks from the moulding department, I've got so used to it that I can talk and joke with my friends as I work. That makes every day different, and I enjoy it. Food Factory. The story of one of the world's largest food factories, told by some of its workers, circa 1938. It has been my aim, and that of the other directors, and I don't think it is a low aim, to make the business profitable. My second aim has been to try to make Bourneville a happy place. The provision of amenities, of good buildings, is of course a help, but a spirit of justice, of fellowship, of give and take, an atmosphere of cheerfulness, are more important than material surroundings. Our third aim has been to serve the community as a whole, but always giving the public a high standard of quality at a reasonable price, striving to be efficient and enterprising in our policy. We have also tried to make Bourneville an asset to the neighbourhood. Edward Cadbury, Bourneville Works Magazine, December 1953. Bourneville. The Cadbury Village. What was once farmland, 4 miles to the southwest of Birmingham's industrial heart, the Cadbury family transformed into a garden chocolate factory, a green suburb with gardens and playing fields, with specially designed houses for the workers in the tree-lined streets around it. A small brook, the Bourne, trickled past nearby. The railway ran sinuously at the edge of the works, and one of the intricate networks of the city's canals threaded its way to the wharf at Cadbury's. The barges glided in to moor up, laden with sacks of cocoa and sugar, with churns containing gallons and gallons of milk from condensing factories close to farms in the countryside, to manufacture the chocolate that was enjoyed in many countries of the world. That was a picture that could be painted in peacetime. But now, in the early 1940s, trade routes were endangered and supplies of milk, sugar and everything else were running short. These were just some of the changes brought about by the war. Night bombing had battered and terrorised the city since August 1940, leaving old landmarks destroyed and streets with smashed missing sections cracked open to the dirty sky, and leaving loss, leaving people sick with fear and exhaustion. Families were doing their best to stay cheerful for the kids, for each other, simply hoping to reach the next morning, and loving and clinging to what and who they had. Part 1. 1941. Chapter 1. Someone was banging on the front door. 6:30 on Holy Thursday morning in their quiet Bourneville street. The early morning after a night of one of the worst air raids of the war. Bang, bang, knock, knock. Oh, Lord, no. Please, no. Anne Gilby limped along the hall, wincing at the pain in her ankle, and stopped in dread on the mat, her hand raised to unlock the door. She still had a blanket round her from the shelter, trying to thaw out after last night. Whoever was on the other side, it could not be good news. If she left the door closed, just didn't answer. None of them were home yet. Martin, her son, was out with the ARP. Her daughter Joy and husband Len were both at the nearby Cadbury Works. He in the Home Guard, she on the night shift. All of them out, as bomb after bomb had fallen, smashing the city. With an effort, Anne forced her hand to the latch. The door swung open to reveal a familiar face.